Hi and welcome to Geraumt, our podcast for the topics of information and design in a spatial context. My name is Christian Junger. I'm a service designer and an information designer. And today, again, you hear it already, we will have a podcast in English and not in German. The reason being, Markus, my business partner, and I have been in London a couple of months ago, and we were at a really nice event of Design Design Society. And there were a couple of really good presentations, and one of them was from Alison Richings. She's a wayfinding design director at Endpoint, and she's leading the London team. And it says her focus is human behavior, environmental psychology, and strategic wayfinding. And quite interesting, because it was one of the first manuals we got our hands on, was that she was contributing to the national NHS wayfinding guidelines. Endpoint itself, it's a colleague, an agency just as us, specialized on wayfinding, environmental branding, sign design, and placemaking. They have the office in London and a global office as well in Dubai. And I'm really looking forward to talk to Alison about the topic, which at the conference and today is, what is the new role of us designers in the age of AI? Alison, thanks a lot for your time, and I'm looking forward to our conversation, which starts exactly with this question. How will AI influence our work in the future?
Well, thank you, Christian. That was a really nice introduction. And the conference was really good. But yes, let's start with how will AI impact us as designers? I think that we have to understand the full gambit of what wayfinding might be like in the future. And I think that's probably a good place to start. We've already seen in the last 10 to 15 years how much things like Google Maps, satellite navigation systems in cars have altered the way we move around the streets. And we know that in the next few years, AI is going to become quite agentic, which means that we will hand over some of our tasks that we ordinarily do to agents. And there may be one or a series of agents working for us. And what we will do is we'll get our wearable. It won't be a mobile phone anymore. Let's face it, who even now makes an actual phone call? I mean, I phoned my friend the other day and she answered within about 2 seconds and went, "What's happened?" And I said, "Nothing." She said, "But you rang me. No one rings me." So, you know, it's all going to be about our wearable devices, whatever that might be, whether that's Meta glasses or whether that's something that's more immersive. We can't predict. But you'll put your wearable on and you will say that you want to go somewhere and you will follow instructions that come up in AR on your glasses. And as a part of that, your agent or agents will think about what you're doing, how much time you've got to do it in, and whether there are other things that it can merge into that journey. So maybe it notices that you're a bit dehydrated, so it wants to send you to the coffee shop to get you a coffee. Maybe it notices that you've got spare time because all the train connections have worked, so it sends you into a park on your way. And then when you arrive inside a building that you want to move around, that in tune should be quite seamless. You should have a series of instructions and a multitude of possibilities. And what that does for us in society is it personalizes and it speaks of our emotion. And it, in a way, weirdly, that level of digital humanizes, because it means that you can take your focus away from pure navigation and into something else. And rather than being stuck looking at your phone, you've got the opportunity to look around you and, in theory, make deeper human connections, because your brain is not being used to struggle with navigation. So there's some really great theories about how wayfinding could change and ultimately for good. But I also think that has a massive impact on us as designers.
Can I ask just a question that, because that triggered something which is quite interesting, because let's stay on this part that will change, like clients, customers will change, end customers
exactly.
will change.
Exactly.
And I kind of resonated with your description that, at least that's how I perceive it, that it's more about the customer journeys in the future. I know that we argument heavily when we talk with clients that wayfinding itself is not like disconnected from our daily routines, but it's part of our daily routines.
Absolutely.
And it seems your argument is that in the future, due to AI and how fast and how individually it can react, this connection will become more relevant, more even more visible, that we don't go from A to B like we have to go to B, but in between we probably go to C because AI tells us, oh, you should now get a coffee or a snack or whatever. Did I understand that correctly?
Yes, definitely. And I think that's the thing. I think what you touched upon is one of the big key things that I think wayfinding designers need to put at the heart of everything they do. And we do it anyway, but I think it's really strong for clients to understand the importance of it. And that is the whole journey and putting humans first. We are people wrapped up in our own emotions. We might be navigating to a place that we're really comfortable with. We equally might still be navigating to a place that frightens us or that we do not know. You know, we'll still need to go to hospitals in the future to get fixed. You know, I don't think there's going to be a point where you can have an operation in your living room. I mean, maybe there will be, but I don't think that's near future. We'll still need to go to work, which is kind of a more standard everyday journey. You still will want to go to a bar or socialize with your friends. There's still lots and lots of things that you'll want to do. And the one thing that is within that is us and our emotions and what level of pressure we're under and how we feel whilst we're making those journeys. Some of the most common wayfinding mistakes or challenges are actually around the level of stress a person feels. Because if you're in an airport and you're a little bit late and you're legging it to the gate, then you're likely to misread the instructions you're being given. And imagine you're a little bit late and you're running to the gate, but it's being thrown in front of you on your glasses, so you're very clear about where to go. Taking just that tiny layer of stress off is going to make a real difference. And what we need to do that is understand the users in a much greater depth. If we're going to enable people to really personalize their journeys, we've really got to understand what makes them tick. We've got to understand what they like, what they don't like. We've got to understand if they're the type of people who are always super early or the type of people that are really late or the type of people that love nature or the type of people that just prefer to be inside. Because by knowing all of that, those agents that help to create those journeys for us in a personalized way should do it in a much more sophisticated way, especially for you. And that's what's exciting.
It's quite interesting because the things you said, because we were asking about how does AI shape it in the future, our role, or in at the moment, the customer behavior. And I had this picture when you were talking of the difference in the future will be that even in the present, we already have the data available to make decisions. Like if I have certain fears within me that would influence my behavior on how I walk within a city from A to B or which sites I would choose as a tourist, I think the data would already be available to give me the safest route from A to B. But in the future, what would change is that there is another one, the AI agent, that would make these decisions. that the interesting thing is it would make the decisions either without our knowledge or with our knowledge. That is an interesting aspect.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's about the depth. I mean, it sounds very scary when you think of it on face value.
The Orwell side to it, but
absolutely.
The fun side as well, for some reason. It's interesting to shape this kind of a tool as well.
Absolutely.
At least from my point of view.
So, I mean, I know that agentic AI, one of the first places that lots of people talk about it being used is in the travel industry.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you think about holidays, the minute you decide, I'm going to go on holiday, you have to decide where you're going to go, what you're going to do, plan out an itinerary, go and book a flight or a series of flights, maybe some trains. Then you've got to book your hotel. Then you've got to work out how you get from the airport to your hotel. And there's a whole series of actually quite admin heavy, but also sort of things that you've got to deeply research. Then when you arrive at your holiday, you've then got to navigate around from places that you are utterly unfamiliar with, in countries where the language might be different to the one that you speak, where you've really got no idea what you're doing. And I think that this is where agentic AI can really kind of come into its own, because if you've got a health agent that really understands your physical and mental needs, if you've got a like a navigation agent that knows that you need to be really early or else you're going to get stressed, if you've got an agent that knows whether you can walk 2 kilometers or only 10 steps, and then you've got an agent that needs to go out and find the right travel and the right sort of itinerary that you really like.
Is it?
And lots of people are doing it in a non-agentic way at the moment. So lots of people go to ChatGPT and say, I'm going on holiday to so-and-so, give me the best places. But what the agent will do is take the smaller tasks out of your hands. So you would be able to say, I want to go on holiday. I want to see these kinds of things. I want it to be this warm. Give me a bunch of options. And then when you see the options, you can say, price that up for me. And if it's within my budget of X and X, pay and do it and put it all in place. And then when you're navigating, you can just get your agent to check your stress levels, check that you're okay, check in with you, make sure that everything is going the way you want it to. So although it all sounds very Orwellian and very sort of crazy, even maybe creepy, it actually could have massive benefits.
Mm-hmm.
But that also brings us to the idea of data.
Yes.
And I don't think that we should miss out on talking about data, because all of this can only work if it's got data. And it's got to have...
And if they are connected. I mean, we're talking
exactly.
About... We're talking of data quality. We're talking about how to get it together. The people I talk to, probably on your side, I reckon it's the same. They say if people talk about the AI hype, they talk about what's possible, but very few of those people actually talk about where did you get good data within the companies or even across companies to make this possible.
I agree. And I think that it is a political issue. And I think that it's an issue that people are struggling with, both on a sort of small scale level, us as individuals, where do we get our data from and how reliable is it? What does it do for me? And also, am I giving my data away for free? Or when I say for free, almost cheaply. Like, we talk a lot about GDPR and protection of individuals, but then we'll go on Facebook and post lots of information about ourselves that can be used by big companies to make decisions about who you are and push different things to you. And so I think we have to really think about our relationship with data. But I also think that wayfinding is about trust. I think it's always been about trust. You know, people have to trust us to give them instructions in the right place that gets them where they want to be.
Really?
And where it goes wrong when people get lost, it's an erosion of trust. And so data has to be trustful, and then it has to come from open sources. And that's really going to be tough. And there are going to be areas where data is going to be monetized. And I don't think we can get away from that. But as a wayfinding designer, we have to advocate for good data. We have to advocate for open sources.
Yes.
And that might also mean that we have to make tough decisions about what digital companies we're prepared to go to for our agentic models and you know, and general information. Because, you know, if in that example, the physical data says you're dehydrated and it wants to send you to a coffee shop to get a drink, where is it getting the data from to tell you that that coffee shop is right for you? Is it that that coffee shop paid loads of money to be at the top of the list, and therefore the one that is right for you goes out of business because no one ever goes there because they didn't pay to be at the top of the list? We have to make sure that there's a level of equality and a level of advocacy as designers, that we try incredibly hard to get data that's trustworthy. If we're going to talk about wayfinding and trust, we have to really think about data and trust. It gets very political, and I think it's quite hard for us as designers to think about the impact of that. But I also think that we've taken on board quite a few things in other areas, such as sustainability. I think we're much more mindful of where materials come from and about what we recycle and how we recycle it as wayfinding designers. I feel like we have to treat data with that same level of respect.
It's interesting, Alison. If I listen to you, I get like this warm feeling inside of me because you made a couple of arguments now where I think, wow, we can work on such valuable things. It helps me to even like the job I like a lot or like more, because like when you said it's about the trust, I mean, that's a commodity that has to be handled carefully.
Absolutely.
Master designers basically get like the trust of companies, their clients' trust in our hands to work with it to help them to make it good.
Yeah.
And the second thing was that we actually have to deal with data, which in itself is a very valuable commodity. So thanks for liking my job, even.
Well, I like my job too.
And I have, because I mean, we're going to talk longer now. I hope you have a little bit time, because we had the spotlight now on the consumer side. I would like to end this part of the focus on how it changes with the one question that I don't know if it's the same on your side, but our clients do ask this question a lot. Do we need analog now that we have digital? And in the age of AI, it's probably a question we will hear even more often. Do we need analog science interventions when we have AI? What would be your answer to that question?
I think we'll always need analog to a point. I think that it will change, and I think its frame of reference will change.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that there is still a place for a series of instructions at some point. And I think that's partly because the AI and agentic AI tech is still very new. It needs to be tested. It needs to work hard enough for us to think, oh, we could do this without putting something in place. And I also think that wayfinding is about all of our senses. It's an experience. It's not just about signs. And we're still going to move around environments. We're not going to just sit in our homes with some glasses on. And how we create interior architecture, how we create outdoor spaces and landscapes, what our streets look like, how we design buildings, all of these have a massive wayfinding component.
Yeah.
And so for me, I might not be designing as many signs as I used to, potentially, but I might be talking about landmarks, and I might be talking about haptics, and I might be talking about the sense of smell, and I might be talking about art. And also, we might get closer to architects in the sense of not that we become architects per se, but that architects can bring us in much earlier on in the process, and we can start influencing how a space is developed in the first place. I mean, let's face it, how many times do we go into a building that's already been designed and they say to us, you know what, the wayfinding's terrible and we don't know how to fix it. And the real problem is that the lifts are hidden, or that there's, you know, too many little rooms, or it's not open enough. You can't see enough vistas or whatever. And maybe if we can work with architects hand in hand right at the beginning and not be seen as groups of people that come in later on, we can help influence things from a wayfinding perspective that might really add a level of intuition to architectural design that will make architects really proud of their work and super happy, but also ensure that us as people get a better emotional engagement with those spaces. Mm-hmm. So I still think we need something analog, but it might creep away from what we know.
From the science.
Yeah.
By the way, I completely agree with your point of view. We teach wayfinding at university, and one of the things I always tell the young students is you have to look, before you start designing any signs, look at the architectural elements, like architectural wayfinding that is relevant in how people find their way, and then start designing the information layer around that and with it especially. I think that's so important.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have seen now that needs will change, behavior will change on the user side. How does that influence our role as designers? So what will we be in the age of AI, or what will we do? How will work change? Will it change?
I think it will change. And actually, there's two really interesting points for me that, and actually to an extent, I sort of struggle with this a little bit. I think the first point is around homogenization. If you think about, it's something I've got a bit of a bee in my bonnet about at the moment, is if you think about navigating using Google Maps or Apple Maps or even City Mapper, what you're doing is what everyone ubiquitously calls blue dot wayfinding. So it's blue dot wayfinding.
What is blue dot wayfinding?
So it's basically on a map, you appear as a blue dot.
Ah, okay.
And then there's a cone that fades out that shows which direction you're facing. So when you open your phone and you go into Google Maps and you say, give me directions to, and you're a pedestrian, and you follow those directions, you are represented on that digital map as a blue dot. And that appears in Google, it appears in Apple, it appears in City Mapper. It's now a thing. It's a blue dot. And if you were to create a new mapping system, you're probably going to use a blue dot. And what that means is we're homogenizing the way we're doing things.
Yeah.
As wayfinding designers, we talk about consistency all of the time. I mean, my clients probably get a little bit sick of me saying we need to be consistent.
Easy.
And so there is something in making things homogenized that's quite sort of interesting because it gives us a layer of consistency.
Mm-hmm.
But equally, where does the expression come? And I think that worries a lot of designers, because if in the future we can just say to AI and to our series of agents, I need to go to, I don't know, let's say the National Gallery in London, and I live in London.
Is it?
And it goes, okay, I'll take you. What do you want to see in the National Gallery? Or it might even say to you, I know what you like. You want to go and see the Botticelli, don't you? And you kind of will set out your, this is what I want to go and see. And then off it will go, and it will take you on a journey, and it will take you out of your house. It will take you down the street. It will cross the threshold into public transport systems. It will take you out of the public transport system and down another street or a series of streets. And then it will cross the threshold into the National Gallery and take you all the way to the Botticelli.
Mm-hmm.
Now, should that be one interface that looks the same across all of those things?
Mm-hmm.
Because if it is, then we've homogenized everything to be exactly the same. And your journey on your meta glasses or your contact lens or whatever it is will look exactly the same as mine and exactly the same as another person's, just as the blue dot has kind of taken over in many different systems.
But this now is the starting point on what will the role of a designer be in developing either path, the homogenized path or like the differentiated path. Is that the correct word as an opposite?
So for me, I think firstly, there's a big debate over whether everything is homogenized or whether at different points on those journeys you allow for expression. So a transport expression might be different to a street expression. And an expression inside a museum might be different to outside of a museum. So that will mean, if those expressions change, that the role of a designer will still be about a branded environment,
mm-hmm.
will still be about the kind of curation of a journey and developing a look and feel. It just won't be a static look and feel. It will be a digital look and feel.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that will change environment to environment. If it's homogenized, then that changes the role of wayfinding designers hugely. Then it becomes much more about strategically how we model spaces, how we understand users and their movement. It becomes much more about that user ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And how we design preferences into the system, because there will be 100 different answers. At the moment, there's one answer. There's a sign, or there's a light, or there's a landmark. In the future, if it's being done digitally by agents, then it might be, oh, I've just learned that that road's closed, so I'm going to take you down this different route. So that's a different answer. I've just learned that you've got lots of time on your hands and I know that you like greenery, so I'm going to walk you through this park. That's a different option. I know that you're in a hurry, so I'm going to do this instead. I know that when you get into the National Gallery, you really don't like crowds. So I'm going to find a back route to the Botticelli. So suddenly, instead of it being, you walk into a building, there's a directory, a series of signs, go this way, do that. It becomes much more reactive and much more like a series of decision trees and much more based around people's ecosystems. So I suppose the big takeaways out of all of that are, ecosystems of the user become fundamentally important to designers. Whether it's homogenized or whether these are different branded environments become hugely important to designers and graphically and informationally how we set things out. And then the number of decisions that a user can now make becomes really, really important to the craft of the designer. And how you make all those decisions come together in the right way.
But basically what you said, like what you talked about now, is that in the future, our role as designers is we probably have to think about the whole system differently and design the system differently. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely.
And could we look at the other side as well? Because this is a good opportunity, as I mentioned in our conversation before the podcast, I basically have a co-curator for this podcast. So I did the test in asking ChatGPT and Gemini what questions should I ask and so on. And I looked at the results they gave me, and now I think it's quite interesting to ask one question, because it fits perfectly now. So if we as designers, we think about, okay, now the systems will differ and we have to design different systems. One of the questions I got from AI was, what uniquely human value will SEGD designers bring when AI can generate signage systems, wayfinding maps, and branded environments in seconds? And I would like to do the second one too, because I thought that one was quite interesting from how it imagined what the question would be, because it was, how will the design process itself change when AI becomes a collaborator rather than a tool? I like the differentiation it gave me, actually, because I think that's quite an interesting perspective on how we perceive the tool within or not the tool, how we perceive AI. Do we work with it, or is it working next to us, or is it working with us? And what will be our unique human element in future design?
So, I mean, you know, obviously this is speculation, but it's based upon how we as a company have started to use AI. And me personally, how I've started to use AI, I find that AI, it's about having a conversation, and it's about prompting in the right way. And it's about adding the nuances in, because AI at the moment has not got to a place where it's really nuanced. Not like human creativity and human engagement and human conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And so you really have to set it out and give it really deep prompts. And once you start doing that, it can be a collaborator. It doesn't then have to be just something you use to rewrite an email. I think you can really get quite powerful things from it. That too involves a level of trust, but I think that you can, if you can engage with AI in a very specific way, it can collaborate. It can help support you come up with really good ideas. But what you should never do, and what a designer would be, really lazy design, would be, I'll just put a really quick prompt in ChatGPT or Claude or whatever the latest AI is, and I'll just let it do it.
Is it?
Because that level of laziness, I think we will always see through it, because it's not human and it's not authentic and it's not engaged. And I actually don't think that that's the point of it either. I think we do have to start seeing AI as a fellow designer in the room, but we have to use our creativity and intellect and our humanity to ask it the right set of questions and frame the right problem and help as and be a part of the solution in a major way. If we, I guess it's a little bit, my analogy for it is, you know how when you follow sat-navs, there was a study done a few years ago where they put people in car simulators and they asked one group of people to follow sat-nav, and another group of people were given an old-fashioned atlas and told to plan their journey and then just get in the car, the simulator, and kind of drive. And what they did was on the sat-nav, they took the people that were using it past the same place twice. And then they also took the people that were trying to self-navigate down the same street twice. Mm-hmm. The self-navigators were like, hang on a minute, I've been down this street. And the ones that were using sat-nav didn't notice that they'd been taken down the same street twice. We still have to be present. We still have to play a major part. We can't just go, well, it's all right, AI is going to do it all for us. We've really got to engage on an intellectual and a human and an emotional basis. And then I think that it can be a collaborator in a creative process.
There is a similar study regarding how you perceive a city as a pedestrian. And it's the same thing with Google. If you do Google Maps and you're just there on your mobile phone, you won't get the beauty of the city around you. You just basically are focused on the navigation aspect, but you lose this kind of spatial experience that is all around you, including remembering landmarks. Just as you said, it's the same when walking.
I think that going back to your sort of first part of that two-part question around what will humans bring, I think that what we've got to remember is that word we used earlier, which is trust. And wayfinding is too important to us as humans for us not to trust the system that's supporting us. And I think that what we bring is creativity, trust, dignity, and a level of confidence to wayfinding. And I don't think that anytime soon, even if AI and agentic AI is super clever, that we will fully trust it. I think we need that level of humanity that brings the level of kind of dignity to us as users. And I think that there is massive space for some of the more relentless wayfinding tasks to be done through sort of agentic AI. But I still think that understanding human spaces, understanding humans and how they move and how we behave in a crowd, understanding what we like, what we don't like, what makes us feel comfortable, what makes us feel happy, what gives us the least amount of friction and stress is still in the hands of people, because people respond to people.
And then you think that will be seen if there is like a human touch in the final product?
I think that the human touch is hugely important in the final product. Whether we'll ever get to a place where we trust AI so implicitly that we perceive that it is utterly human, then maybe that does change things. I think there's lots and lots involved in how we behave with our social media, how the algorithms work to make it quite addictive, how it sort of plays on our dopamine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if you're going to talk about wayfinding and if you're going to talk about how much you need to trust that it's going to work for you, I think that we will as humanity need humanity. I just think that if you were to say to lots of people out on the street, how much do you trust Sam Altman, or how much do you trust even our politicians, who are the ones that are going to make decisions around how far AI will go? I still think that people will want to respond to people.
I mean, if you look at other places like music, for example, there is a strong tendency, like a counter revolution. Maybe revolution is a too strong a word, but there is always a counter movement of like, don't use it, or like having something that is without AI. Do you think that could happen? Is that a future scenario as well for us as designers, that the designs that are actually made without design might, within at least a specific client base, have a higher value than AI solutions?
I think that they're a counter protest. Protest is also too strong a word. Revolution and protest are too strong a word. A counter design approach, a counter culture, maybe that's a better way of thinking about it.
Yeah, that's a nice word.
I think will always exist. And I think that if wayfinding becomes more and more homogenized, I actually think that there will be more and more counterculture, because I think that if you run a arts place, for example, you really want people to feel like they're in your place. If you run Harrods, you really want people to feel like they're in Harrods. You don't want them to feel like they're in Harrods, but with a homogenous overlay, with an agent that Harrods is not really bought into, telling you how to really quickly get in and get out, because Harrods want you to stay and they want you to have a glass of fizz and buy some bread and a beautiful handbag, and therefore it's not in their interest in some respects for you to have such a homogenized, frictionless journey. So I do think that there's space for this kind of counterculture, and I think there'll be arts institutions that will just embrace analog and will just want you to be in the moment and be in the space and encourage you to take the glasses off or the contact lens out and just be there. And I actually think that there's a big health movement at the moment that talks about being present. And mm-hmm. I think that we do have to make sure that there's an ability to be present. You know, we have to find the off button sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that will be quite important to wayfinding designers, is that we give the opportunity to press the off button.
I have to come to an end. I don't want to.
I know, I could carry on all day.
It's actually such an interesting topic. And every time you answer something, I mean, 2-3 more questions we could go along in our discussion. I would like to finish this talk. I really formulated it like this talk, but because I'm rather interested in continuing this kind of information, especially since it goes with time. It never gets old, this kind of information, this kind of talk.
Yeah.
I'm telling you the prompt I used for AI to tell me the roles of human beings in the future.
Yeah.
And I give you what I can say is the AI, both AIs like their titles. I mean, everything I tell you reads like the future of business cards. I'm not the writer of business cards. And so the question I asked, probably not grammatically correct, but AI understood it, I think. What will be the future role of an SEGD designer in the age of AI? Give me 3 most likely roles that will be the core competence of human designers. And I'm reading to you the titles now, and maybe you can react on the titles. This will, because those will be our future business cards, according to AI. So the first is called the spatial experience strategist. And in brackets, it says predictive wayfinding.
Okay.
The second one is the multisensory orchestrator. In brackets, ambient environments. And the third one is the ethical guardian of the public realm. I like that one the most.
I like
personally.
That one.
And they're not the same, but they're quite similar, at least. I didn't ask Claude. I asked Gemini and ChatGPT. From the content, I think they're quite similar. What do you think about our future business card titles?
Well, I mean, I have always believed that business card titles is really just about ego. So I think
totally.
That's a real challenge.
But one difference will be there will be longer than today.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think all 3 of those that you mentioned are they're difficult to understand. For a wayfinding designer, where we talk about simplicity, mm-hmm. they're not simple.
No.
But then actually, I don't think too far off the mark. I think there is something very much in strategy and that idea of being in really early in the process to support intuitive design in the environment. So I think the first one that you said something about spatial strategy.
Spatial experience strategist.
Cool, that's quite a title. I think I might start using that one.
Well,
I think there is something
next
in
week,
that.
Shouldn't it?
I know, next week, I'm changing it. That's it. I'm done.
Yeah. God, I don't even get out the correct word. You have to renegotiate. You know, in the next evaluation talk, you say, okay, I don't want more money. I want the new title.
And absolutely.
You get the ethical guardian of the public realm.
Yeah, definitely. I think that there is going to be something in ethics.
Yes.
But I think it's about advocacy. I don't think that us as individual wayfinding designers will have enough power to change the world in the sense that data will, you know, be monetized and, you know, big companies will want your data. But I do think that we should advocate, and I think it's our job with clients mm-hmm. to advocate that they try to use open data. So there is something in the ethics, but it's advocacy rather mm-hmm. than, you know, world-changing, ethical, whatever.
It actually has that in the description. It says core competence is human-centric advocacy and ethical design literacy. That's wow. what the core competence is.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good then. I mean, I don't know what ethical design literacy is as a job, but I, you know, again, I might add that. I'm going to have a very long business card, I think is what we're really finding out. But at the end of the day, I've been doing wayfinding for 25 years. And in that 25 years, I've always talked about three things. And those three things is the environment we're navigating, the information that we provide in that environment, and us as people navigating that environment. And if you always think about those three things and how they come together, you should get user-centered wayfinding. And in a way, your three job titles almost sounds like a fancy way of talking about those three things.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe nothing has changed. Maybe our roles as designers doesn't change. It's
those
exactly
are the future
the same.
Roads, actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
That just like, no, it's new clothes.
Yeah.
But that's about it.
Yeah.
I've been told by listeners, I usually ask two final questions at the end of our podcast, and I haven't asked them for a long time.
Okay.
Sorry, I have to change that now.
That's all right.
You're going to be the first one the interregnum, kind of.
Experiential designer guinea pig.
Yeah,
that's my new title.
Podcasting guinea pig. So actually, the first one is a reading tip you would have for the listeners.
Yes.
And
yes.
The second one is more fun. Maybe not. Let's see. How do you react? When did you laugh very well? Is it that's the correct sentence in English? I know it in German by heart, but when did you laugh the last time full-heartedly? I think that's the correct formulation.
Okay. All right. So reading tip, I'm going to go really analog and really actually quite old. And I'm going to say, read Arthur and Bassini's wayfinding book. It was the first wayfinding book I ever read 25 years ago. At that time, it was already probably 20 years old. And I have to say, it's still an absolute Bible.
We have it. It's a treasure.
Yeah, it's an absolute treasure. The other thing I was going to say is whether we could mention a podcast or two, being that we're talking about the future and no one reads anymore and everyone listens mm-hmm. to podcasts now. So I've kind of got sort of three I'd recommend. One is Shane Parrish, which is I think it's called The Knowledge Project. And he often talks mm-hmm. about the future of AI and what that means to society. And I think they're very long, but they're really good. He comes at it from a very user perspective.
Oh,
the other
nice.
One that I wanted to give a shout out to really is 99% Invisible, which is a wayfinding information designer's greatest podcast, because it's literally about all the things that have ever been designed that you see around you, but you never knew someone designed it. And I think wayfinding's a lot like that. Because people go, whenever I tell people what I do, they go, oh, someone actually designs those things. And I'm like, well, you know, signs don't appear by magic. You know, even AI can't do that yet. And then Hard Fork AI, which is the New York Times AI podcast. It's really short. It's 10 minutes, 15 minutes max. It's once a week. It's a good place to find out what's going on in the world of AI.
Nice.
And then what was the last thing that made me laugh out loud? Well, if we're going to talk about wayfinding, I was in Bucharest this weekend, and at the airport coming back, my beloved husband and I were sitting near the gate in a cafe, and I looked up and I could see the sign, and I went, oh no. And my husband went, what? Oh no, is there something wrong with the plane? You know, is it going to be late? And I went, no. And he went, what? And I went, look at that sign. They've used it. It's behind you, arrow. And then my husband was like, you've got to be kidding me. You are such a wayfinder. And we laughed and laughed and laughed. So that was probably, and that was only yesterday evening. So that was the last time that wayfinding made me laugh. And I just want the world to know that it's behind you, arrows don't work. So please stop doing it. And that's it.
Thanks a lot, Alison.
Oh, I really enjoyed that. Thank you.
I just have to do my final word. Well, my final word, because before you get the final word, is just for our listeners, we have our email address, podcast@geraumt.com. So if you have any recommendations, questions, ask away. And of course, I will book all the information that Alison gave us, plus the link of Endpoint in the show notes. And Alison, as promised, you have the final word. I say thank you a lot for your time. It's one of the longer podcasts now, but I really enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you too. I absolutely loved it. And it was an absolute pleasure to talk about wayfinding. It's just in my soul. I can't help it. And I'm sorry. So thank you.